We can validate your opinion if you took the time to write into the show. 'Cause it's a great debate. Maybe we'll learn something new, 'cause the input comes directly from you for this show. 'Cause it's a great debate. If you don't think our picks are great, a Twitter poll decides its fate. Don't hate us. It's a great debate.
Yeah, I think I could really go pro with this.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I were to portray a superhero, I would of course be Spider-Man at the drop of a hat, even if I was really old and it's what killed me.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and if I were to portray a superhero, I would obviously be Gertrude Yorks from The Runaways. If you've seen the new Hulu show, she's basically me, except shorter and younger. But all that annoying social justice warrior stuff you hate about me is there for her with her purple hair and glasses. And she's got a dino friend.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I were to portray a superhero, it would have to be Captain America, but the nomad version that we're going to see in Infinity War, because A, I look good in black, and B, I get to keep the beard. So those are kind of essential. It's part of my rider. If I show up on set, I need to be able to keep the beard.
You got a Henry Cavill thing going on. The facial hair stays how it is.
Right. Right. Yep.
So might as well cast you as somebody with a beard.
Yeah, you don't want to be CGing a chin on me. That would not go well.
The other day I was trying to Photoshop my mustache out of old pictures of me just to see how much of a pain in the butt it is. And it's a pain in the butt. Pain in the butt.
That's an intensely Dave thing to do.
You know, just as little experiments in polygons, but pixels, but not important. You're listening to Storm of Spoilers. Oh, go. Oh.
Well, can you do it? Like, the bigger issue is not just a still photo. It's, like, in action. Like, because I think Henry Cavill's photoshopped upper lip doesn't look, like, terrible in action. It's just when it tries to move, they're like, that's not right. Okay. Done. With Justin.
And now, the introduction to the show. You're listening to Storm of Spoilers, not the Justice League episode. That was last week, despite our discussion about Henry Cavill's fake lip in Justice League. This week, we're doing our second great debate. It is the format where we pick a pop culture superlative thus far and debate them using listener emails and then conclude it with a Twitter poll to come up with the ultimate conclusion, at least until the next time we have a argument and discussion about it. Who won last time, guys?
I don't remember.
Excellent question. Then I don't remember.
I have no idea.
Well, it was a best horror movie villain.
Yeah.
And I believe I won.
What?
With the Xenomorph.
How embarrassing for you to have to say that for yourself.
I know, but the only thing that gave me the power to voice that opinion is that I won through democracy, which means that my voice is the voice of the people, at least for greatest horror villain on our last great debate.
Was that a bit? Were we just doing a bit? Because I genuinely didn't remember.
No, I mean, I was doing a bit, and you weren't, and I was aware of that. I was like, Neil genuinely doesn't know, and I do, and I'm being a jerk. So.
I will say this. As of this recording, it is still the pinned tweet on Storm of Spoilers. So, with 571 votes in, 47% of which were the Xenomorph from Alien.
And so, we're doing it again this week with greatest superhero performances. We're going to include a hero and a villain section, so we will have two winners after we hear from us, the hosts, and you. But first, you, not about superhero reviews, but through reviews. Not about superhero performances, but through reviews. Intro's going great. Let's throw it off to Joanna.
Yeah. And I'm perfectly prepared for this because I definitely have a review right in front of me ready to read.
This is the most stalling we've ever been able to do naturally.
I don't know.
You had so much time.
I'm not at all stalling. I definitely am ready for all of this. Let's just hope and pray that once I finally open this, I mean this thing that's open right in front of me, there is a new review. Okay. It's thinking about it. Okay. I like this. Oh. How is a DMX-esque accent? How does that go? I'm not doing that. That sounds racial. I'm not doing it.
I feel like it's just like grumbled, like grunty.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think you should do it either. You'll hurt your voice.
It'd be hard to sustain that energy because you have to like psych yourself up first, like with the what? Yeah! Here comes the review! And then you would have to do that the whole way through.
Okay, Sticky P, I hope that Dave just like delivered for you what you were looking for. Sticky P did adhere to the rules, which is 5 stars, but the headline is meh. And Sticky P says, got some goods, got some bads. You my dog, Neil. Hashtag 5-star rule. So that's from Sticky P.
Nice.
That's an accurate review, and I heard every word of it and the hashtag.
Direwolf09 also gave us 5 stars. A great podcast. I love the podcast. Love the spoilers. Hosts are very fun and knowledgeable, although I avoid... I don't know. Did I already read this episode? Or this review?
Hmm.
Okay,
I didn't remember the poll we did from like a month ago. How am I supposed to remember?
Okay, Direwolf09 says, although I avoid political discussions in light of current events, it is relevant. Enjoyed the South Park and Doctor Strange episodes, as well as Hamilton and the DC TV. Joanna, please continue to be a social justice warrior, except for the spoilers for Stranger Things 2, which people were really mad at me about. So,
Need to get to streaming. That's all I'm saying about spoilers for Stranger Things 2.
But, you know, hashtag 5-star rule, both reviews were right in line with that. So that's our...
That's fair. That's how the rules are.
Segment. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. I don't need to encourage you guys to do anything. You're doing everything correct. Just keep on the track with
more,
the reviews.
Just do more of the thing you're already doing correctly.
Dave, will you do DMX again?
If I knew that the whole review would have been that short, I would have done the whole thing as DMX. However, I did do the thing you're not supposed to do, which is blow out your voice doing DMX. So,
never mind.
We'll do more DMX later on down the road when I prep for it.
I like that everybody...
I've done my heavy metal screaming classes and I'm ready to go.
I like that everyone on this podcast who does multiple podcasts a week... either thought about or did a DMX impression, and I'm sitting over here like, nope, not doing it.
That's a good point. Gotta run it ragged. Neil, we talked about this already, is the name of your segment.
Yes.
What do we got?
Several things that, spoiler alert, we talked about already. One, shirts. Guys, right now, as we sort of teased last week, Cotton Bureau is doing their all the t-shirts promotion, where like all their best t-shirts came back, and all 4 of the Storm of Spoilers t-shirts are available currently. So if you go to cottonbureau.com and search Storm of Spoilers, you will get all 4. Now, one of them has already gone to print, essentially, but there's 12 days left to get any of these. So, but one of them is for sure happening, which is Tormund Lives, which I believe was the one we tried. There was somebody on Twitter who was like, I missed out on the Tormund Lives t-shirt. So good job. You get one now. But all the other ones are very close. So get out there and grab those t-shirts. They make excellent gifts for the holidays that are coming up. Allegedly. I just realized that Thanksgiving is this week, like yesterday. So go buy shirts. It's great.
For sure. You have some shoes, you need some service. We have the extra piece.
Yeah. Don't go shirtless. Get one of our shirts. Next thing up, some Game of Thrones news. I have 2 pieces of Game of Thrones news. The first one is something you guys have probably all seen at this point. It's kind of big news, is that the Justice Department caught the HBO hacker, or figured out who it is. They haven't actually caught the guy, because the hacker's name is Behzad Mezri, and he lives in Iran. He's part of an Iranian hacking group. And according to the reports, they attempted to extort 6 million Bitcoin, which as far as I know is like $12 or $12 billion. I have no idea. Like, Bitcoin is so theoretical to me. And there's no word on whether HBO paid any of that. But they now have at least identified who did the hacking and stole the episodes that none of us watched, obviously. Next piece of news. New season 8 details came out via our friends at Watchers on the Wall. Our friend Luca, who we met at Con of Thrones last year, who's a very nice person, wrote up this details about the Unsullied being shot, I guess, marching. It said it wasn't part of like any kind of battle, but the detail is that they all have dragonglass spears. So we can be sure that the dragonglass is going to be part of season 8. Otherwise, that would have been a huge MacGuffin in season 7. And they are marching near the Winterfell set, so I guess they make it to Winterfell.
What?
That's the extent of the news.
Bet you didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, and we're still tracking, and by, when I say we, I mean other people, and I'm just sort of checking up on it every once in a while, the progress of this sort of mysterious castle outside of Titanic Studios. It doesn't really look like any of the other castles, but it also could just be like one of the other gates of King's Landing or something like that. That it's this very large structure they're building, so who knows what that could be.
I have a thing.
Go. Yes.
Amelia Clark, Hair Watch, 2017. Amelia has dyed the roots of her hair back to bleach blonde. So.
Okay. So maybe she was just off. She wasn't filming for maybe a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And now she's back to filming.
Yeah.
Well, her Unsullied are filming, so you think at some point she's going to show up.
You would think.
For that. She is in charge of those guys.
Unless she's too busy boning her nephew.
Yeah, that's also fair. Okay, Dave, I got an email from someone named Martha, which goes with the Justice League theme. But it actually is about Infinity Stones. So we're crossing up some metaphors here. Anyway, this, I feel like, is a question for you. But Martha asks, do you think it's conceivable that the Soul Stone would be in Black Panther / in Wakanda? I say that because the Marvel movie we know the least about, it's also kind of a standalone movie, with the exception of T'Challa's previous crossover in Captain America and Ulysses Klaw reappearing from Ultron. And the last standalone movie that had an Infinity Stone was Doctor Strange. So basically Martha's point is the last time an Infinity Stone showed up, it was in a standalone movie. And yeah, that's it. Do you think it's in Black Panther?
I don't think it's in Black Panther. Is it in Wakanda? Could be. The only thing that's changed since our Thor segment where we speculated on where the Soul Stone could be is since then we've gotten some of my favorite ways to learn about movies, which are translations of foreign descriptions of upcoming Lego sets, which have Black Panther, I believe, defending Wakanda from Corvus Glaive because there's an Infinity Stone there. We don't know if they move it there. We don't know if Legos made that up, or if that sort of lines up with something that happens in the film. Corvus Glaive's part of Thanos' like family. He's also part of the Black Cabal from the comics. At one point during this event called Infinity, but not necessarily having to do with the stones, Namor, not Aquaman, wrong universe, Namor and Black Panther sort of fight outside of Wakanda in this larger conflict that sounds like what this Lego set is sort of emulating. So it wouldn't be impossible to see a sequence like that in Infinity War and have that be a battle for a stone that's in Wakanda. But like I said, I don't know if they move it there or how much of Infinity War at this point is going to be about obtaining the stones. But I think it would still be a weird place for it to be in Black Panther. I think Black Panther is going to be pretty standalone in the sense that I don't know that we're going to see a Soul Stone, and I haven't heard anything about us directly seeing Bucky, who we know is there, or Captain America, who we know is there. I don't think it's in Black Panther, but it could be in Wakanda. So we could both be right situation, Martha.
Nice. Nice. Martha is always the right answer, apparently. I was going to say something about Infinity Wars, mostly that I'm just concerned about the Infinity Stone thing, that like half the movie is going to be about finding Infinity Stones. Is that an unreasonable, anxious thing for me? Do you think?
No, I don't think so. I mean, of like the Lego sets, most of them have to do with individual stones. There's one where Shuri, a Black Panther character, has a machine of which to remove the Stone of Mind from Vision. And because it's a Russian translation of a Lego set, once again, we don't know if that's like going to be a way that Shuri interacts with Vision. We don't know if it's a plan they have. We don't know if it's, you know, for someone's being mind controlled. And then there is a set where you have to get the finished gauntlet away from Thanos, implying that at some point he could have the gauntlet. But again, these are Lego sets, which in Iron Man 3, the Lego set had like the Mandarin battle with like all these boats and stuff that was completely fabricated just to make cool Legos. So you can't trust Lego, but you can also maybe take some hints off of characters there. I don't know. There might be a lot of soul stone searching in this movie, Neil.
So don't believe everything you read on Russian Lego packages is the theme there.
Truth.
All right. And the last thing, you know, we talked a lot about a lot of Marvel stuff when we did Thor, but Joanna, you also wanted to say some things about Runaways, which that starts this week, last week. Did I miss something?
Today, as we record.
Oh, wow. Then I haven't missed it. That's great news. Anyway.
So Runaways is the adaptation of the originally Brian K. Vaughan Marvel comic book, beloved Marvel comic book that came out, I think it was like 2003, about a group of teenagers who discover that their parents are literal supervillains and they run away. It's sort of like a Breakfast Club-ish thing in that you've got just like a group of teens who otherwise would not be necessarily be friends sort of thrown together. And then there's like superpowers involved, but like at its heart, it's a teen drama. So the fact that it has been adapted for Hulu by Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, who, Josh Schwartz created The OC and Gossip Girl. Stephanie Savage co-created Gossip Girl and wrote on The OC. So these are like people who are absolutely fluent in teen drama parlance. The fact that they're the creators on this is like enormously evident because this has been like a particularly shit year for comic book TV shows, I would say. And something that makes Runaways, I think, really stand out is that it does not forget what it needs to be at the heart of it, which is a teen drama. So it's a teen drama with all these other sort of supernatural, otherworldly elements thrown into them. And it works, and it's great. It's really, really great. The casting's great. The crop of teens that you've maybe only seen one of them in One Day at a Time, and otherwise newcomers, a pack of adults, you might recognize James Marsters from a little show called Buffy Vampire Slayer, or the guy who used to play the tech guy, Marshall, on Alias. But, yeah, so the casting's great. The show is great. It looks great, as opposed to some Inhumans terrible comic book shows that we've got this year. And
did Inhumans come out already?
Sure did,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, that one's wow. Done.
Sure did.
Yeah, that one went right by me.
And may we never speak of it again.
And so, you know, they made some changes to Runaways. Like, they got rid of one set of parents because, like, as Josh Schwartz said, he was like, our cast was 19 people, so we whittled it down to 17 people. And they added like this Church of Scientology sort of allegory, which is really, really great. They also added like a dead sister, it seems like to me. So, you know, there's some additions, but this
You'd be surprised at how much mileage you can get out of adding a dead sister.
But, yeah, it's true. But this is like one of the most faithful without being like too obnoxiously faithful. My thesis at the beginning of the year when I saw Legion and Logan was like, or especially Legion, that it was like the best thing you could do sort of in this glut of comic book is to try to be like super different, super, super different. Runaways is by definition different from your average like vigilante hero sort of thing. But this adaptation is very faithful in its spirit and in like its character design to the comics. The comics are great, at least the Brian K. Vaughan run. I'm not as much of a fan as the Joss Whedon run. And Rainbow Rowell, who I love, is a great author, is writing it right now, and I haven't read her new stuff, but I'm interested to see what that looks like. And yeah, Runaways, Hulu. The first three episodes are currently streaming on Hulu, and I just really recommend you check it out. If you're like burnt out on comic book shows, I think leave room for this. It's worth it.
Or if you're not burnt out on comic book shows and you are not like me and crazy on Tuesdays, you can do what I'm doing tonight, which is three episodes of Runaways, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, in bed in a stupor where I can't tell what's real anymore.
You're a bananas person.
All right. Well, that actually accomplishes a lot. That's the end of my segment. We also get in the requisite Buffy and Joss Whedon references.
Sure.
And the fact that Dave is not a sane person. So I'm ready to move on.
Did we talk about the Empire podcast yet?
I'm sure we'll get there.
Don't get people bingo before the first segment. All right, guys. It's time for Great Debate number 2 coming up after this break. We're going to start off with the villain section, because it's more fun, because bad people are more fun, especially when we're just talking about performances.
Especially in superhero movies.
Exactly. We don't have to talk about the actual ramifications of if they killed millions of people. And maybe we don't have to talk about things being problematic. Actually, you know what? I shouldn't call things off limit in debates, because that's the fun of trying to talk things out. We're going to begin with Neil's proposal, which is piggybacking from a user email, it looks like.
Well, yeah, so I picked this one and then went and read the emails. So we're tag teaming this. And at the last minute before we started recording, my housemate Theo, who has been on this pod before, suggested that I just switch to Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. And I have resisted that, but I told him I would at least mention it. He's not going to make the polls, old Arnold. Anyway, so this email comes from Glenn. Glenn and I agree on Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman being absolutely one of the great performances in a superhero movie from a villain. And here's what Glenn has to say. Going a little more traditional with this pick, I'm selecting Michelle Pfeiffer as Selina Kyle / Catwoman in Batman Returns. Batman Returns is my favorite superhero movie, a goth and gothic fairy tale that takes the manic neon stylings of his 89 original and simplifies the color palette, leaving a world of black, white, and red for his four leads to play around. And I'm assuming when he says he, it's Tim Burton. It's a Tim Burton thing. Reflecting each other like funhouse mirrors. Pfeiffer's Catwoman dominates every scene she's in, giving a voice to everyone who's ever felt pushed around by their boss, their parents, their lover, or even someone who's trying to help. She's camp, she's vamp, she's heartbreaking, life's a bitch, now so is she.
Catwoman. Yeah.
Basically, Glenn has said all of the things that are in my soul about Catwoman. I mean,
yeah, and he made like one a tagline. She's camp, she's vamp, she's heartbreaking. I want to see like five movies with that tagline.
starring Ming-Na.
Yeah, and we talked about I've been continuing to ponder the idea of like pop culture crushes, because we had asked that and I couldn't come up with one. But really, when it comes to like, you know, bad girls, this was what, 92, so I was like 8, Catwoman was really up there.
This was in the Tim Burton Batman Returns Catwoman transformation scene. Was a scene that I did a project on in screenwriting class for something that makes emotion, or I guess it's the whole transformation sequence that makes emotional sense, but absolutely no logical sense, where she's pushed out of a window, cats bite her back alive, and then that triggers a complete personality change that she manifests by destroying her very pink apartment and sewing her costume together. And if you look at those things on paper, it's rushed, it doesn't make sense, it's missing emotional pieces. But if you watch that sequence and how Michelle Pfeiffer performs all of it, from like tilting her head back while she's sewing to, you know, smashing on the rhythm to different parts of the score, it makes complete emotional sense, and you're on her side as an anti-hero. So much so that they had to add that final shot of her surviving the movie, because audiences didn't get that she wasn't necessarily dead, because she's Catwoman, even though I think that she is dead. But go figure, however you want to read the end of Batman Returns. They made an animatronic Michelle Pfeiffer that was, I believe, like one third of the size for that last shot.
What?
And you really can't tell unless you're looking for it. But it's an animatronic Catwoman.
Oh, my God.
Man, Dave is coming through in this episode already. Dave's knowledge. I love it. That makes me like it even more. That I know that, because I didn't realize that, like, audiences, like, test audiences didn't get it at the end, and that's why they made her alive. I will say that that was one of the disappointments of my teen years, is that they never got to come back to that. When they went to the Joel Schumacher universe, it, you know, Batman obviously changed significantly, but I would have loved to see Tim Burton finish that as a trilogy and have that cast back.
That's another piece of Danny Elfman's score I'd want back. The bring it back. Maybe not with Anne Hathaway, but just the score, or Michelle Pfeiffer.
I like Anne Hathaway
either,
too.
Either one.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway was good, but it's one of those things where it's like it's super tough to top what came before.
Yes.
Without a bullwhip, for sure. I am going to make an executive decision and throw to Joanna next and leave mine for last of the hosts, because I am also a fan of her pick. I'm a fan of everybody's pick in this villain section, I think, so it's going to be tough.
Well,
Joanna,
leaving aside the idea that I was also thinking of picking Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman, I'm wondering if we should throw in a point of order that is she like really a villain? She's an anti-hero. I don't know. I'm just going to plant that seed of doubt for
all. Well, Catwoman is, she's a traditional villain.
Traditional, but we're talking about a specific performance of a specific actor. So.
Yeah, she's a bat. She blows up a department store.
Yeah, it was empty. I mean, who cares? she's like fighting for women against evil dudes.
I see what you're trying to do here, and I'm not having it. Because
you have to respect it. It's what a villain would do. All right. My villain is probably definitely a villain. And that would be my performance pick is Tom Hiddleston as Loki. Tom Hiddleston as Loki is so good that even in one definitely bad movie and one sort of just oatmeal movie, he's great. Thor 1, Thor 2. Tom Hiddleston's also freaking great and commands, like, is believably a great villain to fight against in the Avengers, which is really hard to do when you're fighting, like, so many heroes. But they picked Loki as their first, you know, super villain to fend off all these heroes. And I think it's super, super believable. You know, and I'm worried about Thanos doing that same thing in these upcoming movies, but like never for a second. Whether he's like giving speeches in a fancy suit outside of an opera house or, you know, getting smashed by the Hulk or whatever it is, it's all greatness from Tom Hiddleston. You know, and then like his performance is so great that, as we discussed on the Thor Ragnarok episode, director Taika Waititi and Thor Ragnarok had to like debase and humiliate Loki constantly so that he would not outshine the star of his own movie. So, you know, like Tom Hiddleston, whether you're storming the stage at Comic-Con and calling the audience, what do you call them? Like something that is
mewling something.
Quims, which is a synonym for a lady bit. or what? I mean, he's just great. And it's so funny when you see his audition for Thor, and you're like, God, that would have been the worst thing in the whole world. Not just because like Tom Hiddleston is wrong for Thor, but like then we wouldn't have had Loki. Like we wouldn't have had this Loki. He's so great. And it's unlike a lot of the other heroes and villains that make our list. Loki isn't obviously he's like a famous Norse figure, but he's not a comic book character that before Thor, like the broader audience was really, really tapped into. And so, you know, Hiddleston is just like really made, it's his, he is Loki, and I'm going to have trouble if anyone ever tries to do Loki on the screen, I'm going to have trouble sort of taking it seriously.
He's like the Iron Man of villains. He was like C level character.
Yeah.
And he was elevated. But here's a question though. Isn't he kind of like a cool guy at the end of Thor 3? Like, isn't he sort of chill with everybody?
That's what I said right at the beginning when I was like, I think my guy is mostly a villain. I mean, if we want to narrow it down to one villain performance, we could just say Avengers, and I would be satisfied with that. He killed Coulson, man.
That's fair.
So
he did.
He
as far
the
as
Justice
I'm
League
concerned,
together.
Even though there's been five seasons of a television show telling me otherwise, he killed Agent Coulson.
Coulson's dead, man. Did you
as
say
far as the Avengers know.
Did you say he brought the Justice League together?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
By killing Coulson.
Exactly.
So, Tom Hiddleston, Loki. That is my bid. Dave.
Okay.
You go.
I am going for a performance that has a little bit more of an anecdotal base, which is, in the late 80s, a young Dave Gonzalez went to Disneyland and saw a 3D film called Captain EO, that starred Michael Jackson. It's a short film, but it's a film that combines the efforts of Steven Spielberg.
We didn't say feature film.
George Lucas and Francis Ford Coppola to make Captain EO. George Lucas and Francis Ford Coppola took on physical production. Steven Spielberg advised to make a space odyssey where Michael Jackson plays a space captain with a whole bunch of Star Wars-esque gugas floating around him that brings the gift of music to the Supreme Leader's planet, and the song is bad. It's called We're Here to Change the World. You don't know it because it's a bad song, implying that the Supreme Leader keeps order over her metallic planet as some sort of like Geiger spider witch and repels bad music. I don't see why that's bad whatsoever. I got so, influenced by his performance, as definitely the first 3D thing I ever saw in any sort of theater, that I had forgotten she was in it. And for a brief period of time in high school, went through a bunch of bad 80s sci-fi movies trying to look for the crazy Geiger spider witch, not realizing it was locked away in Disneyland at Captain EO, which had gone away, I think, by the point I was trying to figure out what it was. It wasn't until the age of YouTube that I was reintroduced to the Supreme Leader, played by Angelica Houston, suspended like high above a stage as like Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas argue with Michael Jackson. It's an interesting performance, but definitely my most memorable superhero villain. And so I'm going to do that difficult thing where we conflate favorite with best and put her forward.
All right.
In my great debate.
So also, I guess Captain EO is a superhero movie, right?
She's a supervillain. She could turn anyone she wants into trash cans. She's assimilated an entire planet. She has a dungeon where she could keep people for hundreds of years. Implying some sort of magic. Okay, if you're ruling a planet and you have a dungeon, I think you're a supervillain, right?
I want Dave to keep his pick because this ensures that he's not winning this time. So. That's great.
I would
Dave.
Just say,
Supreme Leader, good pick.
As the person who is being very judgmental of reader or listener emails, we eliminated ones that were less of a stretch than this.
Well, that's why I bring the randomness to the villain categories.
That's fair.
All right. Speaking of... No, we weren't speaking of that. Okay. Do you want to read... Who wants to read the first email from a listener? on a supervillain?
I could take this one from Ryan in Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Right. Melbourne.
Melbourne, who says, I'll get right to it. The villainous performance that really got under my skin the most is David Tennant's Kilgrave. Not really a horror thing, but acts well as one at times for me. The show, or Melissa and Tennant. Not really a horror thing, but acts well as one at a time. Okay, one at a times is like hyphen. It's a thing. It's plural.
No, one.
Two one at a times?
One at times. Like, at times, he acts like a villain to me.
Oh, he acts like a villain.
Yeah.
At times.
Or not really.
To Ryan in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Got it.
We should have practiced these.
Or it's not really a horror thing, but it acts as a horror thing at time for me. Anyway. Melissa.
The show Melissa and Tennant created an incredible villain I literally still freak out about. The mixture of his power and his personality is what really did it. He is a human capable of these incredible things, and though who he is and who he grew up to be, he uses his power for vicious and horrifying things, while most of the time believing himself to be a good guy, a misunderstood guy, just trying to live his life. Tennant's ability to make him seem so genuine and hurt at rejection just go to add to the horror of the character to me. There have been other characters with the same power or similar who I liked in the past, but since Kilgrave, watching them use their power just makes me uneasy.
I kind of now want to, I'm on record as not having like loved Jessica Jones in the first season. But with like, you know, every single day unveiling a new sex monster in our country. Maybe I want to rewatch Jessica Jones and just be angry at David Tennant the whole time.
We're all living episode 4 of Jessica Jones through episode 8 of Jessica Jones.
Every day. Every day. 2 months now. Is there anything you guys want to say about Kilgrave before I move on?
Kilgrave's a good one. Very creepy.
It's especially good because it's one of those, like a lot of these characters, Catwoman or who we're about to talk about, have performances that like preceded them that would add at least like a tinge of flavor, or they are like, this is going to be this universe's version of this character. Taking the Purple Man and making him like a character capable of sustaining an entire series worth of story and menace is almost a Groot level of elevating a nonsense character into its like most potent form.
All right, this next email comes from Joe Martin. We're talking about two DC villains here. Joe really quickly gets out of the way. The answer is Heath Ledger as the Joker, but since that is the answer, and then moves on to something else. But I do want to pause there. I think the reason I didn't pick the Joker as my villain is because I knew that, like, you know, he had been brought up in emails. And so I don't want to, like, double down on that. But, I mean, Heath Ledger is the Joker. It's, like, it's really hard to argue with that being a phenomenal, iconic performance. If we're talking about villain, like, if we're talking about performance for a villain, Heath Ledger.
For sure. Like, it feels like the obvious answer.
Right. But we should consider the obvious answer when we're debating this stuff.
That's true.
And then,
if you guys wanted to be really crazy trolls and vote the Supreme Leader over the Joker, I wouldn't be against that anti-establishmentarianism.
The Joker might approve of that. But Joe goes on to say, Joe just like blows right past Heath Ledger as the Joker and says, since everyone will say that, let's go with Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor from Superman : the movie. I might be biased. We'll get to why Joe is biased later. Charming schemer in one breath, ruthless potential killer in the next. After Luthor tells Superman of his plans with the rockets and knocks him in the pool, Miss Tessmacher, who is pretty much his girlfriend, tells Lex that her mother lives in Hackensack, which is in the path of one of the rockets. All he does is look down at his watch, then back at her, and shakes his head no as if to say, not anymore. So Lex is a fun character generally. I actually really liked what I think we got another email that nominated Michael Rosenbaum's performance on Smallville, which I actually really like. And then I don't remember the name of the guy who played him on Lois and Clark, but he was super smarmy and great. And I even like the weird shit that Jesse Eisenberg's doing with the character. But Gene Hackman, like, is Lex Luthor to me. Like that's Lex to me. So what is your, Neil, what is your relationship with Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor?
I'm okay with it. I'll allow it. I don't know. I was never, when I was a kid, I was more of a Batman kid than a Superman kid. So I never really got into the Christopher Reeve Superman era until much later. But Gene Hackman's super fun in that, as that character. I also kind of like Kevin Spacey as that character, but I'm not allowed to like Kevin Spacey as anything anymore. So can't do that one. I don't know. I mean, he's definitely the best Lex Luthor, Gene Hackman. And Lex Luthor is kind of a boring villain to me. Sorry, that's a hot take.
Dave, what is your what is your less hot take that's going to get us unbranded as the DC hating podcast?
As Lex, oh, I mean, you're sort of right in that there are certain people who are just in the age group where this is the Lex Luthor that connected to them as something besides a foil for Superman. Like 70s Superman comics, 60s Superman comics weren't always the most serious thing. And Gene Hackman definitely straddles that line of being in a movie, which should be ridiculous because it's a man on wires, but we didn't know that blockbuster superhero movies could be a thing. So it ends up being like the superhero movie for a whole bunch of people. And much like a whole bunch of people think Batman was inherently a campy character, a lot of people think that Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor is like a version of the character. But once again, it's kind of amazing because it's a choice when there's like a nothing comic book character and he just got to be the first one to do it. And now everyone kind of gets to decide if Lex Luthor is going to be someone more obsessed with, you know, like Miss Tessmacher and having real estate, or, you know, do the Jesse Eisenberg thing and try to do a spin on it. But either way, it's always going to be that or a spin on it, or always be perceived that way because Gene Hackman is Lex Luthor. Like that? Is that how I was supposed to do things?
Beautiful.
Yeah. That's a good take.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Should we roll off of Lex into the heroes who might fight him?
But first let's agree we're going to add one of these guys to our Twitter poll. Do we have an idea of who it's going to be?
I think it should be Heath Ledger.
Should probably be Heath Ledger.
If I were picking four from all of the options, it would be...
How dare you? I know what you're... I know why.
It would be Catwoman, Loki, Lex Luthor, and the Joker. Because that's the powerhouse.
That's the murder. But that's within
the rules.
We also left off Magneto. Magneto's also in my like top whatever. But Ian McKellen. But yeah.
I guess it's a question, Dave. How embarrassed do you want to be if the Supreme Leader from Captain EO gets trounced in this poll?
You know, if we push Dave too hard, the readers will circle around him.
And
vote for him out of spite for us. So
here's, I'm actually more interested in the lineup of four that you proposed just as somebody interested in the topic. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to extract a mental promise from all of you listeners right now that you're going to go to YouTube and watch Captain EO. It's like 16 minutes. You're going to hate most of it, but just try to see if you see what I see. And I'm sorry, Angelica Houston, I tried.
You did make a good case.
I think I made the only case. we'll see.
All right, so Joker, Luthor, Loki, and Catwoman.
Yep.
As played by Michelle Pfeiffer, Tom Hiddleston, Heath Ledger, and Gene Hackman. And a reminder to the voters that it's not the character necessarily that you're voting for. It's the performance in that character. So for the Joker, you can't also think of Jack Nicholson and Mark Hamill and Cesar Romero. That's off rules. I can't stop you.
Man, don't think of Cesar Romero.
Vote with your heart.
Talk about trying to get rid of a mustache poorly.
Do they just put white makeup on his mustache?
They sure did.
They did.
It's amazing. All right.
And with that, we'll close out villains and move on to heroes. All right. This section, we're going to start with Neil again. because symmetry.
Yeah, nice. Okay, so mine comes with an anecdotal story, I guess. Well, really, it's just that this actor is my long-lost father, according to a photo that we took together at Comic-Con, like, I don't know, almost 10 years ago at this point, where we look like we could be father and son. But also, this performance is really exceptional, because it happens over the course of two movies. It is one of the franchises that I see people latch onto as they wish they got a third one, mostly because its director is the kind of director that talks about like 9 million projects every time he's interviewed. So who knows what the hell he's actually working on? It is Ron Perlman as Hellboy in Hellboy, I guess, one or two. Doesn't matter. It's performance. His performance over those two films is great. It's just fantastic. And here's why. Because Hellboy is one of those rare things where, you know, it's not a... I don't want to say it wasn't a popular character, but it's not a super mainstream character. And he embodied it in a way that made it accessible and interesting to people like me who had never read the comics. But also, as far as I can tell, people who really love the comics also love Ron Perlman's Hellboy. And he's just so fun in that role, because Hellboy is a great, like, I don't want to say anti-hero, because he is a legit hero, you know, but reluctant hero at times. So
gruff hero.
He's gruff, yeah. So there you go. Ron Perlman as Hellboy. Love it.
I'm into that.
I think it's my turn, right?
It is your turn, yes.
Okay. Hold on, I need to look up a little stat before I talk about my person. So,
that means she's getting serious.
You've heard of actors who played characters a few times.
Yeah, I've heard of actors who play characters.
A few times. Like, I was in three movies as this character. Tom Hiddleston has been Loki four times. Thereabouts, right? Yeah. What about nine times? My pick for best performance as a superhero goes to my boy Hugh Jackman as Logan, a.k.a. Wolverine. Who clawed his way through two dubious at best standalone movies to deliver the most amazing finish to a comic book character run. You know, like, most comic book characters just fade away, but Logan is just like, I'm here, I'm in some bad movies, now I'm in some good movies, now I'm in a great movie, I'm Logan. Hugh Jackman was obviously, like, he was a nobody when they cast him as Wolverine. His performance, like, that was a star-making performance. His performance was a huge part of why the first X-Men was so popular. And then he has just become iconically this character. And, you know, even though he looks nothing like Wolverine in Logan, he has just, like, become iconically that character now. And I'm just amazed at everything that he's done, from, like, smarmy, wisecracking dude with enormous hair in the first movie to, like, this amazing dramatic performance in Logan. And I don't know, I just we were talking before about sort of these performances in this debate of actors who have played a role that's been played before, or actors who have originated a role. Like, Hugh Jackman, there hasn't been, like, a live-action Wolverine before, but, like, we know Wolverine. We all watched X-Men, the animated series. We know who Wolverine is. And then Hugh Jackman's just like, yeah, you think you know, but, like, this is who he is. Heath Ledger did the same thing, the Joker. And I think he's amazing. And he was, like, everything the entire X-Men franchise is pinned on for so long. And he is the best. This is a great debate. The end.
Well, he wasn't even in Deadpool, and they still somehow made it about him. That's how powerful that character
is. That's how powerful Hugh Jackman is.
This one's hard to argue against. I mean, there's nitpicky stuff, like he never wears the yellow suit, but they do kind of hint at it in the Wolverine. But that doesn't have anything to do with his performance. And actually, it's funny, because as you were saying this, I was like, my rebuttal to this would be X-Men Origins Wolverine. But it's not his performance that's the problem with that movie. It's the rest of that movie's the problem. So, that's a good one. It's going to be hard to beat.
And that's true of all the, like, you know, X-Men Apocalypse. I mean, he's fine in that. You know?
Yeah, like Hugh Jackman brings it.
Yeah, it's
every
never
time he
Hugh
plays
Jackman's
Wolverine.
Fault. You know, so. All right, Dave.
Well, I'm going to come in and say, you think 9 movies is a long run to play a character? Try Kevin Conroy as Batman.
How many times has he played Batman?
I don't know, because I don't know if you're counting like episodes.
Yeah, how do you even quantify
Batman
it?
The animated series, the animated film, Mask of the Phantasm, the direct-to-video animated films he's done since then that aren't based on animated series but still use him because he's just so iconically Batman. He even like redubbed apparently Dark Knight Rises trailers for cartoon versions because people asked him to. And Kevin Conroy, by all accounts, is like the friendliest person in the world, and was originally a Juilliard-trained Shakespearean actor who was doing things like Hamlet and Midsummer Night's Dream, and got called in because he did some soap opera work on the side to do a voiceover part, and behind the scenes in Batman the Animated Series, they were having a hell of a time finding somebody to voice Batman or to voice Bruce Wayne, just because everybody was coming in and doing either something to Adam West about it, or doing like a stuttering Michael Keaton something. It wasn't working out. Kevin Conroy comes in, thinks about it for a little while, comes out right out of the gate, according to recent interviews. So who knows how much memory's, you know, tweaking that, but at least really early on with the Batman voice that he still uses. Not only that, but he's able to also do a Bruce Wayne voice and make them sonically distinctive enough that you don't need to have, you know, an illustration in front of you to know which one's which. And in making those two voices distinctive, you could hear him develop Batman becoming more comfortable being Batman and him being less comfortable being Bruce Wayne as the animated series goes on. And that's totally intentional, as they tried to like eke that character through voice performance, and only succeeds because they have somebody like Kevin Conroy who's able to embody Batman in basically any situation. Video games, for instance. He does the Batman Gotham Knights series. Not the Gotham Knights series. That's an animated movie. It's the Arkham Knights series. He also voices Batman in it. And that doesn't even have like a linear narrative, and you still have to feel like Batman at all times. Kevin Conroy's Batman. Kevin Conroy just embodies Batman with his voice at this point. And I don't think, based on the stories I'm trying to communicate to you, that is because, like Gene Hackman, we just saw him early on in our portrayals of Batman. I think that Kevin Conroy actually goes beyond something like Adam West to embody a Batman performance that will be remembered as the Batman long after Kevin Conroy stops doing it. And God knows when that is. Maybe never. Kevin Conroy, immortal.
Kevin Conroy, I just looked it up on IMDb, has 90 credits in his IMDb profile.
That's
about half of them are Batman.
That's very close to 9 movies.
So, yeah. So, I mean, if longevity is, I don't know, is that something we're considering here? I didn't think so when I did mine.
Well, I mean, it's
quality over quantity.
It's quality over quantity, but like the reason that these actors keep coming back to this role is because they are just like so iconically great in these roles, right?
That's
like,
true.
I don't think anybody's, every time they come back, they're not phoning it in. They're trying to at least do something with the character in each appearance.
I mean, and Ron Perlman would have come back for another Hellboy.
He's been trying to for years.
Sore subject. Okay, I'm gonna take this first. It's not quite an email, but I'm gonna take this first listener feedback entry.
User, we call them users now.
User Sonia wrote a lovely email on the character Gambit. But Sonya focused more on the character of Gambit rather than a particular performance. And that's fine, but that's not the prompt. But I see her point that's buried in her email, which is this. Gambit, who's a a.k.a. Remy LeBeau, a Cajun mutant of the X-Men
franchise. It was worth it for that.
My friends and I used to do Remy LeBeau impressions all the time. We're like, hey, Cher, you want to get some gumbo? So the point being, Gambit, if you talk to comic book readers, they think Gambit is a shitbag. If you talk to people who watch X-Men animated series, they think Gambit is great. And if you talk to people who watched poor Taylor Kitsch in X-Men Origins Wolverine, they'll say Gambit sucks. So,
or Gambit who?
Yeah, who's Gambit? Oh, the card guy. Okay, so point being, Chris Potter, who's the voice actor who played Gambit on the X-Men series, let's give him a lot of credit for elevating this character who people hate in the comics, who did not succeed in the movie. I'll blame a lot of that on Taylor Kitsch and other things. But Chris Potter, with his voice acting, his Remy LeBonus, really made Gambit, the animated Gambit, a beloved character. I love Gambit. But I realize I only love that Gambit and no other Gambit. So he was my favorite X-Men before like the live action movies came around. So, and according to user Sonya, he was her first animated crush as a callback to our previous discussion. So Chris Potter as Gambit, we will see if Channing Tatum will be able to make us fall in love with Gambit again in the live action movie that is definitely happening from Fox. But yeah, I think that's a good case for Chris Potter, who's like the only good Gambit. So
I have a question. If I vote for Chris Potter as Gambit, is there a like, is there some sort of doing an impression of an specifically ethnic character in a blown out way that I'm going to get trapped in later on?
Oh, because like Cajun stereotypes? Aren't we allowed to make fun of Cajuns? No?
I mean, I think so. I'm just wondering.
We're not allowed
there's
to make
a
fun
lot
of anyone.
90s cartoons. There's a lot of cartoon portrayals that are based around what I think is just a funny accent that, you know, a la the new documentary about Apu Nahasapima Petalan being horribly offensive to South Asians. You know, trying to keep a lookout for that.
Okay.
I was genuinely asking.
Yeah.
It's a good performance. I just don't know if
it might be
all of a sudden we're gonna
be hashtag problematic. Okay.
Might be hashtag problematic.
I'm gonna put Gambit on the back burner. I mean, I don't think Gambit was gonna make it to the final four anyway, to be honest with you, but I'm gonna put Chris Potter on the back burner, but I would love to hear from any of our Cajun listeners who want to let us know if that portrayal of Gambit is like their version of Apu.
You could just be authentically from place. I'm in Denver. I should not speak up about what I think about things. I'm asking for opinions.
I think it's a fair point. All right. Who wants to read this email that is merely representative of several other emails we got about the person who will probably win this whole thing?
I can take it. Right. So this email comes from Jesse in Chicago, but it also we got from Amon and Joe also sent in emails along these lines. This one says, I just wanted to put a word in for Christopher Reeve's Superman. I feel that his performance has been a bit lost in the more modern age of superhero movies. And for me personally, his performance is the bar all other performances are up against. Reeve was both Clark and Superman. His performance was insanely physical. It wasn't about taking the glasses on or off. It was about a complete physical transformation. His Superman was the embodiment of what heroes could be. He was a gentleman, humble, and an optimist, and cared about humanity. Someone should read this to Zack Snyder. Sorry. he wasn't just abs and superpowers. In a world where we now take for granted watching people on screen fly and perform all sorts of computer-generated acts, he, for the most part, relied on his abilities to charm and act and only, when needed, use his powers for the good of humanity. Reeves' Superman is the blueprint for the supermen and superpeople who have come after him, including such Marvel characters like Captain America. He may not have been as dark and broody, and his suit may have been in bright colors, but he, as the tagline said, made you believe a man could fly. Man, yeah, good emails.
I just got filled with like hope as I listened to that.
And dropping taglines.
I agree with that. Like, because I think Chris Evans as Captain America. I don't know if I want to call it like the best performance, but in terms of like actors who it's hard to like disassociate them from the role, like I have that issue with Chris Evans. Like he is Cap to me, you know. And I feel the same way about Christopher Reeve. And it was just like, I mean, we not only like grew up with Christopher Reeve as Superman, but then like lived through his like terrible accident, and like his death and all of that. And it was just sort of like this larger narrative of like what happens when heroes fall and all of that. And Joe Martin in his email about Christopher Reeve mentions this one scene that I'm sure you've all seen the GIF of, which is Clark deciding he's going to tell Lois who he is. So he like takes off his glasses and squares his shoulders and just like becomes Superman, and then decides not to and puts the glasses back on and shrinks back down into Clark. So like the physicality of that transformation is so pronounced. That's really, really incredible performance. So not to make the case for someone else, but Christopher Reeve Superman is hard to beat.
All right.
I mean, I also want to add into this that even though, like, this was basically the first Lex, Superman had been, like, around in, like, the pop culture zeitgeist and was huge in America by the time this movie came out, which is why the movie could exist. So he's not only embodying his take on the character, but he managed to have that take encapsulate so much of what Superman had become under different lenses to different people that they were able to rally behind Reeves on screen as Superman. Pretty amazing still.
Yeah. Okay, so if we got to pick four out of these, essentially five, my thought is, with, you know, best regards to Gambit, but I think Gambit's out.
Or Wash Share. Yeah,
I feel like if we're going to get a good representative poll, we got to go with the four powerhouses.
Ron Perlman's helpful.
Yeah, obviously. He's going to win. I don't know what you guys are thinking.
Well, I don't know. I love how the other one, we have like Catwoman, the Joker, Lex Luthor, and Loki. Loki is sort of an outlier there, but okay. And then we have like Batman, Superman, Wolverine, and Hellboy.
Listen, I do not appreciate what's going on here with regard to my guy, Ron Perlman, my father, Ron Perlman.
It's good that you're mixing it. It's good that you're mixing it up a little bit. Like we couldn't go for Captain EO, but it shouldn't be like Batman, Superman, Wolverine, and what, Iron Man? Like, I don't know. It's good.
Yeah, but
I mean, yeah. I was trying to think about like, that's really close to like just like the pantheon of superhero performances.
Yeah, at least no one put up like Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. I would have had an issue with it.
So. No, I was really close to doing Blade though, but like Blade has a really bad movie at the end of his run.
I almost did Blade, but I was like, remember all those set reports about how in Blade 3 Wesley Snipes is just in his trailer smoking pot?
Yeah, and he would refer to himself as Blade through sticky note. Right, so that was the same thing. Blade 3 kind of got Blade off, but that doesn't mean that Blade wasn't really close to being represented. And then you're right. I think if I were to do it again, I would have argued Magneto, but I'm happy that people are gonna be watching Captain EO, which I made them all promise.
Yeah, they all promised. I heard them promise you.
They don't know.
Good. Good. All right. So after this episode airs, you could go to twitter.com/stormspoilers. There will be two polls. One for the best hero performance, and the other for the best villain performance. Once again, performance. These are the performances across multiple films in some cases, but not the best character. That's a fight for another great debate. All right. as we round out this episode and let you guys off and have a Thanksgiving of your own making, Neil, what are we doing next week?
Excellent question, Dave. Next week, we've got our November mailbag, which you guys could send us in your questions. We have not picked, there's not really a theme to the mailbag. I know Stranger Things came out last time, but, you know, some things like, what are you guys going to watch over Thanksgiving that we could maybe talk about? Like, I've watched most of The Punisher. Most.
Oh.
I think I'm going to go see Coco. So we could,
I've seen Coco. We can talk about Pixar.
Sure. We just
great
can't...
day to talk about Pixar. I will not talk about The Punisher. If you want to talk about
that's
The Punisher,
fair.
That's fine. I will take like a nap during that segment, though. So
we can also talk about some Oscar movies. If you have questions about Oscar movies, I'll be spending the weekend watching a bunch of screeners. I also may or may not have seen The Post.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting that. I'm also going out to my local, you know, art house theaters and trying to catch up on my prestige movies as much as possible. But I'm also, you know, going to try to digest some Netflix things. And as I've said previously, lots of superhero shows. By this time next week, we will have seen the CW crossover episode.
Ooh.
So... if you have any questions about how attractive I find Nazi Supergirl,
wait, what?
I could awkwardly answer those.
She has
can't
pants.
Wait,
she has pants.
You know, pants.
Well, it's just like the Kate Blanchett of Supergirls now. I mean, I'm caroling in my mind, but like it's just a darker goth. Yeah, Supergirl. Man, maybe she'll fight other. It's gonna be a lot. We'll know by this time next week.
Cool. So send us your questions. They obviously could be just about anything, but keep them, you know, relevant to what's going on in the world of pop culture. Except for there's certain stuff we don't want to talk about. But yeah.
Well, no one ever was hurt by respectfully asking a question. We'll curate for you, friends.
That's true.
You ask whatever you want.
Ask whatever you want, guys. We'll make it work. So yeah, next week, big November mailbag, and we will also talk about the results of this week's great debates.
Yeah. Can you have an exemption hall pass for Blade 3 and put Blade back in there? Maybe we'll talk about it next week. All right. Until that next week, guys, where could people find more of your work over this holiday break? Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. I will be working on the Friday of Thanksgiving week if you want to hear what I have to say about what's going on that day. Hopefully no one is exposed as a sex monster. You can.
Unlikely.
You can also hear me talk about a lot of things on Little Gold Men, including my thoughts on Three Billboards outside of Ebbings, Missouri. And you can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Mr. Neil Miller?
You can find me on filmschoolrejects.com. I will also be working on Friday. I gave my editors the whole rest of the week off, so this is probably going to go poorly. But I will be around in case any sex monster related news breaks. That'll be great. Also, you can follow me at Rejects on Twitter. You can make sure you follow our show at Storm of Spoilers. If you haven't, that's where the polls go for this episode. So, like, come on, let's connect the dots here. And also, don't forget to email us your questions, stormofspoilers@gmail.com, and we will curate them for next week.
Yeah, we can also throw them up on our website, stormofspoilers.com.
That one, too.
Ali left a comment on our Justice League episode that asked if we could do an off-season tour episode for Avatar The Last Airbender Legend of Korra sometime in the future.
Oh,
maybe that's a really good idea.
For Korra or for, like, should we do Avatar since... Okay, anyway.
Well, maybe there would also be guests. Maybe it could lead to other things. Maybe this is a good idea. All I'm saying is that we read the comments on the website. Thank you very much for leading them. Also, shout out to Marlon Wallace, who also left a comment. stormspoilers.com. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. I had a pop album that was called Sex Monster. Really bad choice changing that. Tweet at me what you think it should be instead. That's all a joke. That was all a really bad joke. Tune in for more bad jokes next week on Star Wars Spoilers.
Yo, you ready? Yeah, I'm ready, right? The fast life, getting twisted almost every night. My mind is deeper than a voice featured on Barry White. I'm not the Mary type. I'll make a sit in vinegar to get the candy tight. I'm flattered at all the chatter and comparisons to the great, soon to see me right on Madison. Bally sneakers trying to stay about the Madisons. Hot top and tacky shit, I'm like a wild Iraqi. Outdoors with my sport vest. Leather on the shoulder, hold the rifle in place. Knife in your face. I'm out the world just like a lightning in space. The ice sculptures on the table going nice with the plates and grapes. This is madness, certified madness. Rapping like a bandit, surfing my advantage.